Hey, let's go on a Monday, December 22nd, 2025. Ryan Armani, JR Afternoon. Brian Morton across the glass. Danielle Mason is there, too. Just a couple of days left to get your shopping done, to get all that wrapping done. Are you done? Are you a last-minute procrastinator? Have you been sitting pretty these last couple of weeks or so because you are such a planner that you plan this stuff out as Danielle Mason is doing a dance across? Are you a planner? You've got all this stuff done.
I'm done. I'm done wrapping. I do it in spurts because it's exhausting to wrap 30 presents. Because I wrap literally everything. I'm talking, if it goes in the stocking, it's being wrapped. If it's like a tiny minuscule thing, it's getting wrapped. If it's a bottle of water, it's getting wrapped.
God bless you, Danielle, because so many people these days will just put stuff in a gift bag.
Oh, don't get me started.
The gift bag is fine.
No, it's not.
But you've got to wrap what's in the gift bag then.
Correct. My friend does that. She will give me like a big old bag, and it's just full of tissue paper, and I don't feel anything when I open it.
God bless you, because I do think now we have gotten to be such a lazy species that we just will throw a gift in a gift bag with tissue paper on top and say, here. You've got to wrap the stuff because you lead to the element of surprise. Well, big element of surprise if you're a Lions fan. I'm not sure anybody saw this coming, but the season is on the brink for the Detroit Lions. Brutal day yesterday for the Lions and all their fans. They lose to the Steelers 29-24. The Lions have now lost back-to-back games for the first time since October of 2022. Over three full calendar years, and it couldn't have happened at a worse time. So many reasons for it. I know a lot of people are going to be blaming the officials today, and we'll probably get into that. Jennifer Hammond from Fox 2 is going to join us in the next segment to talk Lions. The offensive pass interference penalty on Isaac Tesla would have been a game-winning touchdown. That offensive pass interference penalty on Amon-Ra St. Brown would have been a game-winning touchdown that ended the game. That was called back, ended the game. I'm not going to blame the officials, though. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to blame the injuries. While there are plenty to go around, I'm going to start, as unpopular as it is in this city, I'm going to blame Dan Campbell. And let me first and foremost say this. There is no human being alive that I would rather be the coach of the Detroit Lions, even to this day. But, guy, you gotta adjust. You have to adjust to the game that you're playing in. He might be one of the worst game managers in the league when it comes down to this stuff. I know you want to go for it all the time. I know the fourth down play is your thing. But sometimes in life, you just have to take what's given to you. Maybe it's an opportunity for a new job. Maybe it's an opportunity at a free lunch. Whatever the opportunity is, sometimes you just got to take what's before you. In a game when your offensive line is on life support, you start the game with a 3-and-out, and then Pittsburgh comes down and kicks a field goal to take a 3-0 lead. You just felt like this was going to be one of those games. And I say it all the time. A play in the first quarter could be as game-altering as a play in the fourth. Lions grinding it out on the ensuing possession. A fourth and goal at the 3. They elect to go for it instead of taking the 3 points. And they didn't get it. They came up empty on that possession, and it was huge. Because if they kick the field goal there, the end of the game drama never even happens. They drain the clock, they kick a chip shot field goal, and they win the game. Now, I also think it's important, a lot of people pointing out, well, if you kick the field goal there, maybe the rest of the game doesn't play out the way that it did. And I agree with you in theory on that. But I think yesterday's game is one of those games that would have played out exactly, almost identical to the way it ultimately played out. And it cost the Lions. It cost the Lions a win. it costs the Lions potentially a chance to win a division, to make the playoffs. And here we are with two games left. The Lions have to win two games, and the Packers have to lose two games to make the playoffs and to keep this thing going. We'll talk to Jennifer Hammond coming up in about less than 10 minutes from now. But first, I want to check in with Marie Osborne. Newly released federal documents are shedding more light on the long-running investigation into Jeffrey Epstein. And one of the cases is from right here in the state of Michigan. WJR's Marie Osborne with more details on that. Hey, Marie.
Hi, Ryan. So among these documents, in files from a civil lawsuit in 2020, in which a woman identified only as Jane Doe says she first encountered Epstein as a young teenager at a Northern Michigan arts camp in the mid-1990s. According to the complaint, Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell approached her on the Interlochen campus and began inserting themselves into her life, offering mentorship, financial support, access to opportunities. The filings allege that this relationship quickly evolved into years of exploitation and sex abuse, beginning when she was just 13. Jane Doe later received compensation through the Epstein Victims Fund after this case was settled. The camp, again, the Interlochen Center for the Arts, says in internal reviews conducted after Epstein's past convictions and again following his 2019 arrest, found no reports involving him. The institution does not notes that it did cut ties with Epstein many years ago and has since strengthened its student safety protocols. And Ryan, the lawsuit is one of many accounts included in these newly unsealed records, offering some additional detail and how Epstein cultivated access to young women in particular and the environments in which he operated.
It's incredible how he was allowed to operate for as long as he did. I don't think I will ever be able to grasp how that works, to where you are literally running a child pedophilia ring. And it just goes on for over a decade. It's unbelievable. It's unthinkable. Unthinkable, Marie.
Absolutely. And, you know, people like this depend on people, normal people, kind of just saying, oh, well, that's not really weird or something I need to report. That's what they count on. And that's how this is how it comes down to this.
No doubt. All right, my friend, we'll check back in with you in the next hour.
Thank you.
You got it. That's WJR's Marie Osborne. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Fox 2's Jennifer Hammond. She was at the game yesterday. One of the things she said post-game was that was as quiet a locker room as she has seen since the 2023 locker room in San Francisco when the Detroit lost in the NFC Championship game. So we'll talk to Hammer next. And we'll take your phone calls as well. 800-859-0WJR. 800-859-0957. 760-WJR. 760-WJR. Lots of heads hanging around here. For the play of the Detroit Lions, first time in 3 years, over three calendar years, they've lost back-to-back games. Horrible time to do it. And look, so much of the talk will be about the end of the game and all that is fine. I think you got to look at the head coach in this, and you have to coach the game you're in. Take points in the first quarter. And there's a number of different things that have happened in the game yesterday that we could point to. And to help us talk about it, Jennifer Hammond, Fox 2, a sports reporter who was there yesterday. And Jen, I heard you say yesterday that was as quiet a locker room as you have heard since 2023 in San Francisco.
It really was, Ryan. And it's funny because by all accounts, right, the loss to the Commanders last year was more devastating because they went 15-2 and they had the first round bye. And I think expectations were higher for them to take the next step because they got that number one seed in the NFC. But for whatever reason, that just didn't feel as bad to me as the San Francisco loss, I think because they were so close and it wasn't really expected. And I think yesterday what the feeling was is that it wasn't really expected from the fans, from the team, from the coaching staff. But I would say that you could kind of see it coming. We've watched this kind of ping-ponging back and forth between wins and losses all year long, ever since they started 4-1, when they were really clicking along and they had pretty good health on the back end of the defense and along the offensive line. And since that time, it's just been very difficult to find any consistency on either side of the ball.
You know, I said that, look, there's not a human being alive that I would rather coach this team than Dan Campbell. Still feel that to this day. But I'm so befuddled that there just is no adjustment. We go back to the San Francisco game, and everybody points to it. They're up 24-10 in the third quarter, 4th-and-2 at the 28. Kick a field goal, go up 3 scores, and instead you botch a 4th-down play, touchdown, fumble, touchdown, 24-24. We could replay it all we want. It feels like there's no learning going on as far as game management goes. The offensive line is completely banged up yesterday. Why not take points in the first quarter?
Yeah, and I agree with you on all accounts. Dan Campbell is the best coach for this team, and I have a ton of respect for him, and I still think he's the greatest coach that this team has ever had. I mean, it's been a
100%,
long time.
100%.
Since there's been a coach like Dan Campbell, and I think he's terrific. He lives a certain way, and love it or hate it, that is how they've found their success. So you can't, you know, it's live by the sword, die by the sword, and I hate trying to steal cliches and just throw them in a blanket way at something, but there are situations, and we've seen him learn at times to be a little bit more conservative, if that's the right word for it, and that he has actually, you know, either punted or kicked a field goal on 4th down. And yesterday in the first quarter, when they did get close enough to kick that field goal, I did turn to someone next to me and I said, you're only down 3-0. I like competing and staying even water, right? Stay right with them.
Yes.
And yes, when you look at the final score, that 3 points, if they were going downfield, they could have kicked a field goal to win it. That's all they would have needed if they would have gotten that field goal in the first quarter. But at the same time, there's no way of predicting that the game goes the same way and that everything unfolds exactly as it would have if you kick that field goal. So it's a little bit of a moot point to me that you can't really pin it on that and say, if you would have just kicked that field goal, you would have won the game. I mean, a lot of things have to come into play, and nothing ever runs exactly the same when you make a different choice. But I feel that Campbell understands what this team is. I think where we're getting a little bit off track is thinking that that offensive line is still the one that they had last year and even the year before. And it's hard to plug and play guys. And the offensive line is one place where you need continuity. And we saw it in the first game of the season against the Packers when they were just, you know, lost. They looked lost in that first game. And then they came back and they played really well against Chicago. They made corrections. They were communicating well. They were on their home field. And they looked pretty terrific for, you know, the next 4 games, 5 games. And even in spurts in between, you know, the team played very well against the Bucs on a Monday night game. They played very well against Dallas. They've had some great moments, but it's just been hard to maintain consistency when there's so many guys going in and out. And even the guys along the offensive line that have been healthy, or shall I say, have been available, have not been healthy enough.
Jen, you hit the nail on the head. I think that because of this offensive line, that's why I just wish Dan would have coached this game a little bit differently. Even some of the plays that he called, because that offensive line is so banged up, this is not the 2024 or 2023 offensive line that you're playing behind. You've got to play it differently. And it did bite them, but that's neither here nor there now. I hate talking about this season like it's over, because it's not. There is still a slight chance. But, you know, as far as this win 2 in a row and the Packers lose 2 in a row, I think the hardest part of that is winning the 2 in a row. I think it's very possible that Green Bay can lose 2 in a row, but can Detroit win 2 in a row?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And that game in Chicago to end the season, well, all right, let's even just start with Minnesota. We saw what Minnesota did to them on their own home field. And guess what? They're going to come with that same game plan again. That defense in Minneapolis is going to be preparing to try to keep Jared Goff off his spot. And when they can't run the ball, I mean, every game in which they've rushed for under 100 yards, they've lost this season. And yesterday, 15 was an all-time low. And then to go turn around and give up 230, I mean, they really – the Steelers played bully ball against the Lions and beat them at their own game. It's almost like they stole their identity. And for the Lions to go to Minneapolis and perform any better, it's going to be a really big challenge. And then at the same time – you've got Green Bay hosting the Ravens, who were eliminated. You know, they can't win the division because of the Steelers' win yesterday and their loss. And then Lamar Jackson gets hurt. So there's so many other dynamics at play for that team as well. I don't see them getting in the postseason now. Before the game yesterday, I thought they were going to win a close one. I thought the Steelers were going to give them a game, but they would be able to win. And I expected that they could get into the postseason. But now I don't see it. And it's hard. It's really hard because we have become accustomed over the last couple of years to postseason football in Detroit and with our Lions. And I think that's a great expectation. And if you step back maybe in the offseason and look at this, it's a good feeling to have, knowing that we're disappointed because we didn't make the playoffs.
Right.
You know, we've seen so much really unsuccessful football in this town. But they need to be better, and everyone needs to do some soul searching. They need to dig deep. They need to look at their personnel. But when you've got so many talented guys that deserve to get paid and are on contracts that need to be paid, you've got some tough choices to make. And in the NFL these days, it's really hard to sustain that kind of level. The Kansas City Chiefs and the Eagles are really kind of unicorns in that sense.
Jen, I got about a minute left, but just from you've covered this team for damn near 30 years. This is exactly the greatest period of Lions football we've ever seen. But how would you characterize where this team is in the window? 2023 NFC Championship game. They are worse the year after that, worse the year after that. Where are we right now with the Detroit Lions?
Obviously, if they don't make the playoffs this year, the window has closed temporarily. But I do only think it is temporarily, because they've still got a lot of key components here. They've got a lot of important young pieces. This is a really young team. And when they lost to the Niners and they did not get to the Super Bowl that season, I said to someone, this is as close as they're ever going to get.
I think that was me.
Yeah, did I say that too? I was really beaten up by that loss.
I was
because
too.
I wanted it so badly for the fans. Oh. I want the fans of Detroit to have a team, have a Super Bowl team, and for the team, you know, for the Lions. But I do believe that their window can creep open again. They've just got to play their cards right and make sure that they get the right pieces along that offensive line, because that is the heart and the lifeblood of this offense. That's how they win.
The great Jennifer Hammond. Merry Christmas, my friend. Happy New Year.
Oh,
and I miss you.
Enjoy those kiddos.
Oh,
I
know.
Christmas with little ones. I miss my little. Thank you, Brian.
Merry
Thanks
Christmas,
for me
bud.
And have a wonderful holiday.
You
honey.
Got it. You too, my friend. We'll take your calls next. Who's to blame for the Lions' loss for the season? 800-859-0957. 760 WJR. In about 10 minutes from now, Dr. Michael Lutz from the Michigan Men's Health Foundation is here. We're going to talk about the flu. The flu is bad this year. There's no doubt about it. So we'll talk about the flu. Also, saw this story. If you're spending too much money this holiday season, what that could be doing to your heart. So we'll talk to Dr. Lutz about all of those things in about 10 minutes from now. But first, I want to stick with the Detroit Lions. 800-859-0WJR, 800-859-0957. It just feels like the season is on the brink. Here's what Dan Campbell had to say after the game.
I mean, I don't even want to get into it, you know, because it's not going to change anything. We still lost. You think you score, you don't score. And then, you know, you think you're going to have another play. Replay it or back it up one more shot, and it doesn't. And that's just, I guess that's the way it's written in the rule book. So that's frustrating. But there again, it should never come to that. We had our opportunities. We weren't able to put it in before that play.
talking about the offensive pass interference penalties on the Detroit Lions, Isaac Tesla and Amon-Ra St. Brown. Speaking of Amon-Ra, here's what he had to say afterwards.
It sucks, man. Losing sucks. Not being in control sucks. Like you said, I feel like a lot of us have gotten used to being in control. It is what it is. We can't change it. We're here now. We just got to, come together. At the end of the day, like you said, we don't really control much. We control our game and what we do. Thursday against Minnesota, but for us, we want to, whether we make the playoffs or not, we want to finish out strong the right way and play our brand of football. I think that's the biggest thing. Get back to what we do and play, line football.
One of the things about the Lions, too, it just feels like they came into the season with zero urgency. How many times did we as fans and everybody that is passionate about the Detroit Lions say, you got to go for it. You got to go for it. And it seems like they never went for it and took this really relaxed attitude with their roster construction. Aiden Hutchinson was coming back from his leg being snapped in half. And they re-signed Marcus Davenport, who has given this team absolutely nothing, counted on Josh Pascal. I don't think he played a game this year, and then went to bat with an offensive line, which has been your entire MO. It has been who you are as a football team. This offensive line has been horrible. And it's not hard to understand why this team is 8-7 with a construction of a roster like that. And, Dan Campbell coaching this thing like it's 2023 or 2024. This team is not any of those teams, and you've got to change it up a little bit. Let's get to Billy in River Rouge. Billy, you're on 760 WJR. Hey, Billy.
Hey, Ryan. How you doing today, buddy?
Good, buddy. You?
Same old, brother. I just want to say, I think the Lions kind of set their own destiny back to 2 years ago when they were supposed to play the 49ers to advance into the playoffs. And they kind of just looked at San Francisco like they were nothing. They were already there. They acted like they had that game already won and they hadn't even played. And I think that just kind of reset the old Dick Lane curse right back on.
Well, one of the things – yeah, go ahead, Billy. Go ahead.
Another thing, with Dan, hey, break your kneecaps, and I love him to death, but come on, dude. Got to take the points.
It just felt like that yesterday. There's no doubt about it. Billy, Merry Christmas to you, buddy. Thanks so much for calling, my friend. Yeah, it just felt like that for sure. It felt like they had to take the points of the first quarter, and then you see what happens from there. But this football team, man, Dan Campbell said afterwards, after that San Francisco game at the NFC Championship game that they lost, there's no guarantee we'll ever get back here. Those are the words he said in the post-game podium remarks after the loss to San Francisco. And I think we all just assumed that the following year it was going to go up from there, not down from there. And really the high water mark for this franchise has been losing the NFC Championship game to San Francisco, a game where they had a big lead, a 3-score lead. Will that be the tops for this franchise? Gary in Brownstown, you're on 760 WJR. Big Gary, how you doing, my man? Merry Christmas.
Hey, same to you, Ryan. Merry Christmas. Hey, why is it, though, the Lions keep getting bad calls every game? I mean, they're playing two teams. They're playing the other team, and they're playing against the refs. That DK Metcalf, he should have been suspended, thrown out of the game, when he was hassling the fan. I mean, words make a difference, but he's a professional. The fans in the stand, I give that fan credit for kind of standing his ground, right? I mean, and besides that, like you said, they should have taken that field goal in the first period. And their O-line, their O-line's depleted, but you know what? So are other teams, right? I mean, dude.
Including the Steelers yesterday, by the way.
Yeah. I'm in my 70s. The last time the Lions won a championship was 1957 when there was only six teams. Come on, man. I want to see it. A Super Bowl win before I die. Please, somebody help me.
No doubt. Gary, thanks so much, buddy. Merry Christmas to you. Let me get to Dave in Rochester. Dave, you're on 760 WJR. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Ryan. A red letter day in history. You and I agree on something.
Yes. Way to go. All right, Dave.
A real quick aside first. Anyone out there who thinks the Lions still have a chance, take $100, 1,000, 16 to 1. So your 100 will be 1,600. Go to FanDuel. Go to any betting site you prefer. You're going to get a 16 to 1 odds if you think they really have a chance. And by the way, you're not still holding with your they're going to Super Bowl.
No, I've given that up. I have given that up, Dave. I have given that up. I do not think they're going to the Super Bowl this year, sadly.
Okay, let's go to your point, which I agree with. This whole deal, fourth down, we go for it. That can be pretty stupid at times. You brought up that quiet, keep talking about that quiet dressing room from 23 season, yep. 2 years ago. Is actually January 28th, 2028. Let's take a look at that fourth down, we go for it. With 22 minutes left in the game, they had a chance to go back up after San Francisco took the kickoff and turned it from a 17-14 game with 22 minutes left.
Yep,
they had a chance from only the 28-yard line with 2 yards to go. Instead of the field goal, the gimme field goal, let's go for fourth down. And what happened? Boom, Jared Goff whiffed on the pass.
Changed everything. David, changed everything. There's no doubt. Yep. Dave, buddy,
wait a second.
Hurry. I got 30 seconds before a break.
8 minutes left in the game. They're at the 30-yard. Three to go. 3 yards to go. Tie the game with a field goal. What do they do? Let's go for it because we go for it. And Jared Goff whiffed again on another pass. I mean, that was a chance to go to the Super Bowl, first time ever.
No doubt. And when they didn't get that first down, San Francisco scored. Detroit fumbled. San Francisco scored again. And there you have it. We can revisit that game all we want. Dave, Merry Christmas to you, buddy. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. And thanks for being such a good listener here at 760 WJR. We really appreciate you. I know we disagree a lot. But I'll take the win today. I'll take the win. You and I agree, baby. Good stuff. Hey, we're coming back with Dr. Michael Lutz, president of the Michigan Men's Health Foundation, talking about the flu and how bad it is, what you could do to stay healthy. 760 WJR. 760 WJR. It is that time of the week that we bring in our guy, president of Michigan Men's Health Foundation, Dr. Michael Lutz. Doc, how are you, my friend?
It's a great cold afternoon here.
You got all that shopping and all that wrapping done?
Can't do enough. We're close, though. Coming near the end.
I looked at my wife the other day, and I said, you know what? I'm done shopping. I'm done wrapping. She's like, what do you have to get? Something for me? What? She does all the shopping in her house, and I don't. So I love her to death. Thanks for that. So that's why maybe I'm done so early. I just have to get for her. It works.
It does.
It works. But I wanted to talk to you, Doc. I have heard this all over the place. The flu is really bad this year. I saw earlier this morning a report that said 49,000 hospitalizations, 1,900 deaths, 4.6 million people diagnosed with the flu this season so far.
The numbers are blasting off, and they're blasting off really early. And most of it's because of this new variant. And, of course, you know, we're getting tired of hearing that word variant because it has so many meanings ever since COVID. But this is the real deal. H3N2 with what they call the subclade K variant. And, you know, go get your vaccine because the vaccine will still prevent serious illness and hospitalization, even with this variant. But it may not stop you from getting the flu.
I was going to ask you about the flu shot. Is this considered a year where the flu shot is effective or not as effective as years past?
It's effective, but not as effective.
Okay.
So you hit it right on the head because of the variant. This variant makes it spread more rapidly and more aggressively, and that's why in the UK, which is being affected right now, they're calling it the super flu, and the rate of cases of ER visits has been doubling on a weekly basis. So this thing's taking off.
If you have not gotten your shot yet, but you see this and you're like, I'm gonna go get my shot, how soon, what is the period of time where that shot protects you, I guess? Is it weeks? Is it days? Is it instant? How does that work?
Yeah, it's a couple of weeks before it really kicks in. But the bottom line is, better late than never on getting the flu vaccine. So getting it now is still incredibly helpful because the flu season still has not blasted off in all over the country. It's just in pockets of the country where we're seeing it, New York, Denver, and now Michigan's actually starting to pop up.
What are some effective ways to try to keep yourself healthy?
Well, you know, the things you can do are the things that can actually help keep you clean. You know, frequent hand washing, using hand sanitizers.
Are you a fan of the hand sanitizer?
Total fan.
Okay, yeah, me too.
Fan.
I didn't know if it was in my head or if it's actually something that's effective.
Yeah, and I think probably the dirtiest thing that we have on our bodies probably now our cell phone, considering people touch their cell phones around
that's
the clock 24/7. So you really need to keep your cell phone as clean as possible. So that's why I have that in italics in my notes.
Yeah.
But things like doorknobs, you know, we used to always talk about doorknobs, countertops. But, you know, the thing that people forget about is that, you know, you now have these at-home tests.
Mm.
So if you think you're feeling unwell, you think you may have the flu or COVID or whatever it is, use one of the at-home COVID flu tests, because if you have it, there is an antiviral available in the market called Tamiflu, and it really does shorten the course. So you can actually shorten your suffering quite a bit.
Is there a period of time that you have to take that Tamiflu before so that is effective?
That's a great question. Yeah, early on. The earlier you take it, the more effective it is. So, you know, the key thing is if you think you're feeling unwell, test yourself.
No doubt. I mean, it's incredible, man. This is the time of year. And I see, like, you know, my kids, for instance, my kids refuse to wear coats. I don't know if it's like a contract that they signed with other kids or if it's the coat doesn't make them look cool. Does just being out in cold weather, does that make your body break down to where you're more susceptible to some of these germs? Or is that just an old myth?
It's part and part. But the reality is that for momentary exposures to the cold weather, it's not going to be an issue.
Yeah. When the flu is in your house, we talked a little bit about this last week. Yeah. But just to reiterate, if you missed that conversation, if there is illness in your house, are you trying to isolate that person in one room? What is the best course of action so that that flu doesn't go around the whole house?
Well, I say good luck.
Yeah.
To start with, but exposing, you know, just reducing the exposure to things that you all come in contact with, a refrigerator door, sink faucets, things that everybody touches. If you could keep the contact of all those things to a minimum and the person who's infected, kind of keep them from touching things.
Talking to Dr. Michael Lutz, president of the Michigan Men's Health Foundation. Doc, I wanted to ask you about this Mayo Clinic study. It talked about spending money this holiday season and the strain it could put on your heart. Researchers used AI to analyze electrocardiograms from 280,000 patients seen at the Mayo Clinic from 2018 to 2023. And they found that patients experiencing financial stress had accelerated cardiac aging. Financial stress put such an additional strain on the heart. Is that something that you have seen over the course of your life?
Yeah, absolutely. Financial stress is a huge factor in heart disease. It's a huge factor in cancer survivorship. You can look at the Pink Fund that was started by Molly McDonald, the Blue Fund that we have for our Men's Health Foundation. Prostate cancer survivorship actually reduces by 50% if you're facing personal financial hardship. So financial toxicity is a huge thing and has to be really addressed.
One of the conclusions of this study was researchers say that doctors should consider asking patients about financial stress, about food insecurity, housing stress, those three things specifically, just as part and parcel of getting a conversation started and seeing, you know, why a person's heart looks the way it does, perhaps.
You know, more and more hospitals are getting aware of this, and they're adding into their questionnaire database from patients are being discharged, what are their food securities? Because they've shown that if they do have food insecurities, the chance of rehospitalization goes up significantly. So they're actually addressing that on their discharge.
You know, that part, the food insecurity part of it, you know, we always say, the more money you have, the better you can eat, the healthier food you can eat. And you're seeing that in people's bodies and people's hearts and people's just overall total health picture.
And financial health does roll over into so many things. You know, someone who doesn't have the financial securities won't be able to get the medications they need to treat their illnesses. They're going to have other issues as far as nutrition. They won't sleep as well. Their stress factors go up significantly more. And all these things do have negative impact on their outcomes.
Man, stress is such a silent killer. There's no doubt about it. And the more you can alleviate that stress, the better off you can be. I don't know how you do it, but if you can kind of take a little bit off on the front end, I guess, or the back end, whatever, whichever way you want to say it. I mean, that's it's a tough thing. Stress will kill you.
It will, but hopefully not right now, and I hope everybody has a happy holiday.
Let's go. Let's go. Good job, Dr. Lutz. Good job, my friend. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. We'll see you in the new year.
Looking forward to it.
You got it. Dr. Michael Lutz, president of the Michigan Men's Health Foundation. You can find Dr. Lutz and everybody else at MichiganMen'sHealthFoundation.org. We're coming back. Hour number two of the program. We'll get you caught up on the news of the day. And what are your favorite Christmas movies? What are the must-see movies of the season? 760 WJR. Hour number two of the program here on a Monday, December 22nd, 2025. If you're out and about, thanks for making WJR part of your day. We appreciate it. Maybe you're heading to the mall. Malls are packed, by the way. Maybe you're heading to Costco or Kroger or any store to get some last-minute items for your fridge, for your meal, for your gift. I'll tell you, I was going to work this morning. I don't remember what. I think it was like 5:20. Heading in to Fox 2, and I was not expecting so many people to be out on the roads, but I think a lot of people are probably working today and tomorrow, or at least physically working today and tomorrow, and then going to probably have some time off. So if you are working, finish strong. Finish strong, baby. Finish strong. No doubt about it. We talked to Jennifer Hammond in hour number one and Dr. Michael Lutz. We invite you to go back 760 WJR, WJR.com, and the WJR free mobile app. You can go listen to the podcast of those conversations that we had. We're grateful that we had them with both of those two fine people. Coming up next, we're going to talk about Christmas movies with Adam Graham, reporter, film critic for the Detroit News. Are there any new must-see Christmas movies that you have to see? We always talk about some of the regular Home Alone and Christmas Vacation and all of these. I want to know about some newer movies, and perhaps we'll ask about Avatar, big movie weekend there as well. But this just in, actually, we didn't really talk about the DK Metcalf, but it's been talked about all day. The Steelers wide receiver that was caught in a heated moment on camera between a Lions fan and Pittsburgh wide receiver DK Metcalf. The two had some sort of dialogue, and then Metcalf takes a swing at the fan. Now, that fan told the Detroit Free Press that he called DK by his real name, DeKalen Zacharias Metcalf, and he says, quote, "Then he grabbed me and ripped my shirt," end quote. Metcalf was not ejected. The NFL is investigating this. Now, last night, Chad Johnson on his Chad Johnson, former NFL wide receiver, on his podcast said, quote, "I got word. Obviously, I'm not condoning putting your hands on a fan or punching a fan, but he did call him a racial slur. He called him the N-word, and he did call his mom a C-word. I think those words being exchanged and the fan saying that, I think that's where the action occurred. That's a bad combination of words." Well, this just in, 15 minutes ago, from the head Murphy law firm that is representing Ryan Kennedy, who is the fan that was involved in the incident with DK Metcalf yesterday. This is from Head Murphy Law, Sean Head, in Farmington Hills. "Ryan Kennedy categorically denies using the N-word and the C-word or any other racial, misogynistic, or hate-based slur. The allegations are completely false. Since these false statements began circulating, Mr. Kennedy has been subject to harassment, threats, and messages advocating violence. Mr. Kennedy is a lifelong Detroit Lions fan who attended the game lawfully, never anticipated becoming the subject of national attention, much less false accusations of racism. Because this matter will now likely be the subject of a formal legal proceeding, Mr. Kennedy will not comment further at this time." That's really interesting because there were a lot of people that were in that general vicinity. As part of this statement from the lawyer, it says, no private individual. No, not that part. Okay. "The claims suggesting otherwise are untrue and are not supported by video evidence, eyewitness accounts, or any contemporaneous reporting." I think this is an easy one to prove or disprove. There's a lot of people there sitting around. Did people hear him use that language or did they not? And if not, and you're accused of such things, is that defamation? Is there a major lawsuit that could be filed? Maybe we'll ask an attorney that question at some point, but there is going to be much more of this story to play out. Meanwhile, as the year winds down, new polling shows many Americans are closing out December without plans for additional charitable giving. WJR's Marie Osborne takes a closer look at the poll that suggests this. Hey, Marie.
Hi, Ryan. And you know this as well as I do. For a lot of nonprofits, December is a critical month. Nearly a third of annual donations typically arrive in the final month of the year. So that makes these last days of the year especially important for organizations counting on community support. So researchers found that roughly half of adults say they have already made their contributions for this year. While only a small share expect to donate before New Year's Eve, nearly a third say they won't be giving at all. It's been a year of competing pressures. There's cuts to social programs, reductions in foreign aid, and a freeze in food assistance. And that's created more demand for nonprofit support. But at the same time, rising prices, slow wage growth has left a lot of households with less room to give, even with new tax incentives encouraging donations. There is a bright spot. Check out charity. About 4 in 10 adults say they have chipped in at the register. We've all seen this, right? You can round up the purchase that you're making. And older Americans are especially likely to give in this way. So it's a few pennies sometimes or a few cents sometimes, but that apparently is really adding up. And one last note, Ryan, on Giving Tuesday, it continues to generate billions of dollars nationwide, but far more money was spent on Black Friday than donated on Giving Tuesday.
You know, you raise an interesting point. How many times are you asked to round up? I mean, sometimes if you've gone to 3 or 4 stores in one day and you're always asked to round up, it depends when they get you. By store 4, you're like, no, quit asking me.
Yeah.
But look, I know a lot of these charities depend on it. But it's just everybody's tight, man. And if if there's not a lot to go around, I mean, you gotta cut back where you can. I don't know what to say about it. We have such generous people. I mean, we just had the Forgotten Harvest with the Chelani Foundation. That charity raised over $400,000. The Mitch Album Radiothon, $2.4 million. People are very, very generous around here, but there's also instances where you can't do it. You can't do it.
People
and
are really,
it.
Yeah. They're really pinched is what's happening.
No doubt. Marie, thanks, my friend. We'll check in with
Thank
you tomorrow. You got
Thank
it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
WJR's Marie Osborne there. Hey, coming back with Adam Graham, reporter, film critic of the Detroit News. The best Christmas movies to watch. You still got some time. 760 WJR. Christmas Day, just a couple of days away. What movies are you watching? You know, we talked about this. We talk about it every year. It's hard not to. The debate you probably heard every year this time now is Die Hard a Christmas movie or not? And no matter how many times it gets brought up, it seems like America is still divided. The movie is set on Christmas Eve, references the holiday, focuses on holiday-adjacent themes. It's not necessarily festive. The film star Bruce Willis did say it's not a Christmas movie, but the filmmaker himself said it was. The writer says it is a Christmas movie. I never thought it was a Christmas movie, but I've given up on the argument. Adam Graham, reporter, film critic, Detroit News, joins us now. Adam, where do you fall in line there? Is it or is it not Die Hard a Christmas movie?
It's funny that we're still doing this every year, but I think I prefer the is Die Hard a Christmas movie argument to what's kind of started to replace it in the culture, which is pricing out everything from Home Alone in today's dollars. So, which is like, can't believe how much the groceries were. So yes, let's go back to Die Hard. I say that it is a Christmas movie, and I think Die Hard 2 is a Christmas movie also.
That is so funny because I almost turn away at arguments like this and stories like this. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Fine. Whatever you say. Adam, now I am sort of a traditionalist when it comes to Christmas movies. I, of course, go to the well, the Christmas Vacation, Home Alone, Polar Express. Yeah. I've got two little kids and all that stuff. What am I missing out on? What do I need to see? I feel like there's an entire world of Christmas movies that have happened post Home Alone and post Polar Express and Christmas Vacation. What am I missing out here? Do you have some favorites? Do you have some recommendations?
I've got some favorites, and I think that those ones that you mentioned, Christmas Vacation, Home Alone, Polar Express, they all came out in that corridor of, let's say, between like 89 and 2002, which is kind of like, I don't know, core for a certain age group. So I think that like those are like the class, like that has like surpassed your kind of like, it's the modern day equivalent of like White Christmas, It's a Wonderful Life, Miracle on 34th Street, right?
That's and a
Elf,
great point,
I guess you
man.
You can throw Elf in there as well. Like, these are the classics to kind of, like, this generation of adults. And I think that they're great movies, and I can't tell you better things than those movies. Like, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation is something that I thought was, like, amusing as a child, but now I see kind of, like, the richness of more than I'm, a seasoned adult. And when Clark goes upstairs into the attic to watch those Christmas movies and he tears up, I mean, that's an emotional scene. But there's funny bits in Christmas Vacation. I think Christmas Vacation is probably my preferred Christmas time movie.
Same.
There's funny bits that remain funny. There's line deliveries from Chevy Chase that are just always great. Snake licking, he's having that fit at the end. So I love Christmas Vacation and Home Alone. I haven't seen Home Alone in ages, but it's always there. I do like a Die Hard watch this time of year. Also, I really like, I think it's weird the way that this one is aging, because the politics, or maybe like the coupling politics of Love Actually are rather problematic almost across the board, but there is so much sweetness and warmth in that movie that, you know, even though, like, the one guy is clearly stalking Keira Knightley, I like to go back to when the movie was fresh, I just thought it was, like, the sweetest, warmest, funniest, in the way that Love Actually really gave us the modern relationship we have to Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You. That song was not in the culture the way it has been since Love Actually came out. So there's a lot to be said for Love Actually. And I'm spiraling here.
No,
there was a movie that came out last year. There was a movie that came out last year. You know, we love Judy Greer, Livonia's own Judy Greer, as a Livonia man these days myself. We love Judy Greer. The best Christmas pageant ever is a movie that she put out last year. And it's very sweet. It's very warm. It's about a kind of like the worst girl in town, kind of the one who has like these stories about her and everyone's afraid of her. And her and her family are, you know, like less than fortunate. But they all come together in this big kind of like church pageant. And it's a sweet, funny movie. Came out in theaters last year. I think it's kind of like underseen. It's under the radar. It's a good one to seek out this holiday or probably future holidays as well. I was hoping that one would have a shot at kind of entering the canon.
But I think you're so right, though, too, Adam. I mean, that decade, you know, from about 89 to 02, you know, that 10, 12-year period, that makes us feel good. You know, if you're Absolutely. of a certain age, it's those movies that we keep going back to because mm-hmm. they make us feel good. And you're so right about the It's a Wonderful Life and White Christmas and stuff like that. That's what, you know, a different generation would say. There's no doubt about it. One movie, you know, it was on last night. I didn't think I would talk to you about this, but it was a movie that was on last night. And I found my wife and I just kind of sat on it and we watched it and watched it to the end. And that was Sound of Music. A Sound of Music is played around Christmas time every year on ABC. Is that a Christmas movie?
It's been so long since I've seen Sound of Music. Mean, are there themes in there? Is it during the holidays?
I didn't think so, but I remember every year around this time, around Christmas time, they play Sound of Music as if it's a Christmas movie. I don't think there's any Christmas themes at all in the movie unless I'm mistaken. But, I mean, I don't know. If Die Hard is a Christmas movie, I mean, it's not implausible that Sound of Music can be. I don't know.
We can say any movie that brings a family together to watch something together at this time of year seems Christmas carols, you know, throw them out the window. Anything's a Christmas movie if you watch it with your family and you get warm feelings from it. Let's just say that.
No doubt about it. If the Sound of
Music can fill that role, then let it. You know, what's interesting, too, is like in the last couple of years, because the Christmas movie kind of machine has been taken over by these streaming titles,
yes.
right? Like it used to be like the Hallmark and Lifetime movies, and now those movies are kind of getting funneled through Netflix. And so we kind of lower our expectations for these movies. You can see oftentimes they're like filmed in July and they're pumping in like CGI snow. That's fine. And these movies are kind of like vehicles for stars of yesteryear who maybe didn't get their shot at the big time to kind of either come back or recirculate in the culture. There's one this year. It's called A Merry Little Xmas. X is E-X, as in your X. and it stars Alicia Silverstone from Clueless, who I think, you know, from the Aerosmith videos on, I just always have had a soft spot in my heart for Alicia Silverstone.
Same. We got to be really close to the same age, Adam.
Yes. So she's very cute in this movie. She's just kind of going through like the Christmas movie motions, but it's so good to see Alicia Silverstone and like those little facial expressions that she makes and that she was, you know, that she did so well in Clueless. And then, you know, she never really popped as like a super movie star after Clueless, but all the things that she does well in this movie. It's on Netflix. It's called A Merry Little Xmas. It's a good one for the season. I also watched this year, Disney Plus has a Jonas Brothers Christmas movie out. It's called A Very Jonas Christmas. If you got anybody in the family that cares one iota about the Jonas Brothers, it works. It does the things it needs to do. It is self-aware. It's kind of winking at the fact that it is a Jonas Brothers Christmas movie. So if you're looking for something new to involve the kiddos with this year, you can do worse than a very Jonas Christmas.
Adam, I got about 30 seconds left. Avatar, I believe I saw about 88 million this weekend. Is that light? Is that more? Is that how do you think that fared?
It's a little bit light, and it's, you know, I don't think it's going to reach the heights that it, you know, the previous two installments did, but it might be, it could still probably claw out a decent amount of money and be one of the biggest, you know, studio hits of the year.
One of my favorite guys out there right now. Give him a follow. Adam Graham, reporter, film critic, The Detroit News. Thank you, Adam. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and happy new year, buddy.
Thanks, Ryan, to you as well.
You got it. 760 WJR. We'll talk to Steve Courtney coming up in the next segment. We'll get his take on the Lions loss yesterday and perhaps season-ending loss, even though they're not mathematically eliminated yet. But we'll see what Courtney has to say about that. Hey, the Pistons are in first place and the Red Wings are in first place. And Michigan is closing in on number one, although Courtney probably doesn't care about Michigan so much, but I do. speaking about Michigan, Biff Poggi, interim head coach, says he has interviewed for the job several times, had a number of different conversations with Ward Manuel, and Ward Manuel addressed the team in advance of the Citrus Bowl on December 31st and said he expects to have a head coach named between Christmas and New Year. So we'll see what happens there. Wanted to get just hit you with a couple of stories that I saw that intrigued me. And if you have a thought, if you want to weigh in on any of these topics, feel free. 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. I actually saw this in the Free Press today, and it was, at what age do you feel comfortable leaving the kids home alone? There is a very lengthy winter break underway. Kids are off from school right now through the new year, into the new year. Many parents are asking when their kids can stay home alone. Many experts believe most kids can start being home alone around the age of 11. But you should start off with trial runs for short periods and gradually increase that time alone. Make sure that the kids know their address, know the emergency plan, a list of contacts, parents, trusted neighbors, emergency services, etc. Have strict house rules about visitors so they can open the door and stock it so that they can don't have to use the stove or oven or anything like that. Easy snacks. It's funny because I have a 10-year-old who I would not leave home alone. I mean, I would leave her home alone to maybe run to the corner store, but I'm not going to go to work for 8-9 hours a day and leave them home alone by themselves. I'm not even, I don't know what age that is. Is that 12? Is that 13? And I guess it's dependent upon the maturity of the child itself, obviously. But, you know, going to run an errand is not being gone for 8-9 hours a day to a job. Many parents perhaps have to work this week and next, or the week starting in January. And maybe those kids aren't back to school yet. Who knows? But yeah, I would say 12, 13 at a minimum. 13 for sure, I would do that. 12, it's iffy. Now, are we talking my daughter or my son? Because my daughter is way more responsible than my son would be. My son might need to be 15 before I would feel comfortable leaving him home alone. But that's neither here nor there. Good news for anyone hitting the road this Christmas. According to AAA, the average price for a gallon of regular unleaded is $2.73, down 12 cents over the past week. Lowest prices we have seen in the year 2025. That's a good thing. Right now, drivers in Traverse City and Flint are seeing the cheapest prices. And drivers in Ann Arbor and Metro Detroit are seeing the highest prices. But The average price for a gallon of gas in the state of Michigan, the cheapest they've been in 2025, down to $2.73. And again, that's a good thing. You feel like you're being nickel and dimed all over. You take the win where you can get the win. The question that I have is, how come I still see threes in some spots? Why do I see a 309 and a mile away I see a 279? How does that happen? Can somebody explain that to me? Can somebody explain to me why I see a 299 from a guy and then a half a block away I see a 269? I don't understand that. The price of gas is the price of gas. Now, I understand you have overhead costs and, you know, maybe you've got a market or other things that you're selling other than gas and you're trying to pay staff a certain wage, maybe, I don't know, that you bake into your gas price. But, man, if you're shopping out there for gas, you could see a different price. If there's four different gas stations within a two-mile radius, you potentially could see four different prices. And to me, it's absurd. How are you still seeing 309 when gas prices are like that? I don't know. But if you win the Powerball, I don't think you care about the price of a gallon of gas because there is still a chance to become a billionaire before Christmas. Nobody matched all five numbers on Saturday, so the jackpot has rolled over once again. Tonight's jackpot is an estimated $1.6 billion. That's what somebody's going to win, hopefully tonight, and hopefully a ton of people win that prize. It's the fourth largest Powerball jackpot ever, but still only the second biggest this year. Back in September, there was a $1.7 billion jackpot. Numbers are drawn tonight just before 11 o'clock. You can buy tickets up until 9:45 p.m., and the tickets for the Powerball are just $2 compared to the Mega Millions, which is $5. And again, $1.6 billion tonight is the jackpot. The cash option, I believe, is around $745 million. Of that $745, you got about $145 million worth of federal tax. Then you've got about another $80 million of state tax. So you're probably walking away with just over $500 million. In this $1.6 billion prize tonight, the winner, if you take the lump sum after taxes, will probably walk away with about $550 million or so. My question, as it always is, in stories like this, if I'm walking away with $500 million of $1.6 billion, where does the other $1.1 billion go? Oh, it's going to the schools. That's right. Some of my favorite stuff. Some of my favorite stuff. The lottery. $1.6 billion. You get $500 million after taxes. $1.1 billion. Goes, it evaporates into the cloud, as they say. Bob in Clinton Township, you're on 760 WJR. How you doing, Bob?
Good, Ryan. How are you?
Fantastic, buddy. Fantastic. Couldn't be better.
Hey, I heard you talking about the disparity from one block to another on the gas prices.
Yes.
Here's something for you to think about, and run this by, you know, some people before. And, you know, I come from the finance world. So let's say gas station on the corner gets his delivery on Monday of whether it be 30, 40, or 50,000 gallons of gas, goes into the ground, into the tanks, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, you know, and I don't know what the costs are. Let's say the gas cost him, let's say, $2, okay, per gallon. So now he's already paid. We know what he's paid for it. Now on Wednesday, gas starts shooting up. Now don't forget, he's paid one price for that gas. So now gas has gone up, and now it's $2.50 a gallon. So why does he have to raise the price of his gas when he paid less for what he's raising it to?
You're making too much sense, Bob. You're making too much sense, buddy.
Yeah, and I had mentioned that to somebody else, and they told me, well, the gas in the ground has become more expensive.
Exactly.
It's like, I'm like, wait a minute. What do you mean more expensive? You paid X, and now you're charging 3X for the same gas.
That is funny. Bob, I got to run, but that is a funny point. Yeah, I mean, man, you could make a couple of dollars that way, too, no doubt. Hey, Bob, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays. We're coming right back. Steve Courtney will join us, 760 WJR. All right, 3:50, Mitch Albom Show coming up at the top of the hour. Let's bring in Steve Courtney. Steve, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy New Year, my friend. All of it rolled into one. Feeling a lot better than the Lions are, perhaps.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays to you and yours, Ryan. Of course, our valued listening audience. Just an empty feeling today. I mean, obviously, going into this 2025 season, there was expectation, certainly. Some injuries along the way, an absolutely brutal road schedule. I'm not going to deny I had my concerns going into this year. But it all comes to a halt. In dramatic, and I mean dramatic fashion yesterday, right? The OPI on Amon-Ra St. Brown nullifies what would have been a wild finishing touchdown to win it for the Honolulu Blue and Silver. But after further review, the Lions fall 29-24. Now remember, Ryan, before the Amon-Ra St. Brown offensive pass interference, Isaac Tesla was also called for an OPI for setting a pick. Let me just ask you, and we've seen the replay by now a gazillion times. I think the one on St. Brown was legit. He clearly made contact.
So got separation, extended the arms.
The one on Tesla, however, it looked to me as though his was a continuation of a potential route. That's all I'm saying.
I agree with you on that, Steve. My only thing is the play itself. I've looked at so many different videos today. Half the time it's called, half the time it's not. I mean, as a coach, you got to know that play call in and of itself, the opportunity for the officials to throw the flag, because, again, there's like – it's been run a million times this season. And again, half the time they call it a flag, half the time they don't. So, I mean, why even at the one-yard line put yourself in that position on the play call? Run it with David Montgomery.
Well, how about this? How about this nugget, Ryan? According to the Elias Sports Bureau, the Lions, the only team to have two offensive pass interference penalties enforced in the final 30 seconds of regulation in any game over the last 30 years. But you know what? Here's the way I'm thinking.
They keep making
history. First of all, the Lions finished with 15 yards rushing. So there's that. But when you had Kenneth Gainwell convert that touchdown, one of the craziest touchdown throws I will see, and wouldn't you know it was Aaron Rodgers that threw it.
Unbelievable.
I'm thinking to myself at that point, you know what? I don't think this bodes well. But if you're an optimist, if you're a glasses half full guy, the Lions can still qualify for the NFL's postseason. Oh, it's going to take a little bit of help along the way because what has to happen, and this is the only way, the Lions have to win their final two on the road at Minnesota and, of course, on the road against the Chicago Bears. Meanwhile, the Packers would have to lose to Baltimore at home and then they would have to lose to the Vikings on the road. Is it possible?
Yeah. I think the hardest part of that, though, Steve, is the winning two in a row part.
You're absolutely right.
Because I think that it's very possible for Green Bay to lose these two games. Very possible. I mean, Jordan Love went out with a head injury. I don't anticipate he'll play this week. Now, Baltimore was eliminated last night, so I don't know if Lamar Jackson will play. But I think J.J. McCarthy in Minnesota will have something to say about it in the final week of the regular season. So I think the Packers could absolutely lose two. I think the hardest part of that sequence is the Lions actually winning two in a row.
Well, yeah, because this is obviously a beleaguered Lions team right now. And again, I'm just going to throw this out. Remember, in the first quarter, the Lions had a chance to go for a field goal. Dan Campbell decides to go for it on fourth down with a makeshift offensive line, with a team that was just trying to find itself offensively.
That was the play of the game to me.
So my point is this. If you get the 3 points, all you need at the end is a field goal to get the 30-29 win. And
that was my biggest play of the game, Steve. That was the biggest play of the game. I said it when it happened, and I said it today. Now, a lot of people will say if you kick that field goal in the first quarter, there's no telling how the game script would play out beyond that. I generally agree with that theory. I generally agree with that. But I think that game would have played out exactly as it played out, and the Lions would have absolutely had a chance to kick a field goal at the end of the game. Just the way that game was played yesterday, I think it happens as is, whether you get the three or you don't get the three. I think that was a big mistake, and I think that's an area that Dan Campbell absolutely has to improve. Coach the game
because,
you're in.
You know, look, DC's claim is this is who we are. But as this season has gone on and you've dealt with injuries to that offensive line, which all of a sudden, like virtually overnight, went from a strength to a severe weakness, you know, this isn't who you are. This is who you used to be.
That's exactly right. You hit the nail on the head. Who you are is not the 2023 Lions or the 2024 Lions. You're the 2025 Lions, where I'm a pretty savvy sports guy, and I could not tell you who was starting at center yesterday. Couldn't tell you.
Well, because he was on the practice squad like 24 to 48
right.
hours prior. But,
right.
you know, that being said, I was kind of shocked that he didn't go for the points because he's taken so much flack.
I know.
And then they call an RPO with Jared Goff, who, look, I'm 65 years old. I think I've got more mobility
right.
than Jared Goff.
Oh, man, you still look good, though, Courtney. Hey, we got to run. We'll be listening. Thanks to everybody. Be safe. We'll see you tomorrow. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Enjoy your family. Enjoy your friends. Enjoy life. Let's go. Mitch Albom next on 760 WJR.